Lisa Teeler, Executive Director of Bay Area Community Health Advisory Council in San Mateo County, California. She's speaking with me today. How are you doing, Lisa?
I am blessed and highly favored, and thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you.
Absolutely. So the floor is going to be yours because we want to know about your organization. And I'd like to, first of all, ask you, how did your organization get started?
Well, the Bay Area Community Health Advisory Council, also known as BACHAC, was started 29 years ago by a group of African Americans in San Mateo County that were concerned about the health issues and health disparities of people of color, specifically African Americans, in San Mateo County. They had recently read the community needs assessment that's put out by the county and saw that African Americans were at the top of all the lists, top of the list for cardiovascular disease, tobacco use, various cancers, et cetera. And so they decided that they wanted to do something about it. And so they formed this organization to really bring information to the community in a culturally competent way, to bring programs to the community and also advocate for the voice of the community. And that's how they started. One of their earliest programs that is still running right now is our community mammogram program, which is for women who do not have insurance. This program entitles them to a free mammogram. And we do that in partnership with Mills Peninsula, who's a Sutter Health affiliate. And that program has been going on for 23 years now, or 24 years, where these women can get a mammogram, which is a critical prevention of breast cancer. And then if they do find something, there's a warm handoff to the San Mateo Medical Center.
So is it safe to say, well, what was there before your organization? Where were people in the community going to get this needed health-related information and assistance?
Well, I think they were getting it from a variety of places, but unfortunately, it's not a consistent place of getting information. And sometimes the information they were getting wasn't accurate or relevant to them. And so this organization was trying to hone all the accurate and relevant information and make sure that it was getting out to the folks that really needed to hear it, the folks that needed to know. I was a volunteer of the organization before I was the executive director, and I felt like I was a pretty well-informed individual until I found out that you should be getting screenings for colorectal cancer at age 45 if you're an African-American. I had never even heard that. And I worked in the healthcare profession and I hadn't heard that. So a variety of different places, they were getting their information. And so we were trying to also make sure those places had accurate information. So if the churches and civic organizations and different places, making sure those folks get the consistent and relevant information and also know how to access those services and resources. And we're still struggling with that today, is making sure that our community, not just African-Americans, but we also work with the Pacific Islander community and the Latinx community to make sure that they are getting the information they need. And when services are brought to them, that is in partnership with an organization that's a trusted messenger, because a lot of times folks will get information, but they don't necessarily trust the messenger. And as we know, in communities of color, the messenger is just as important as the message.
So, and also the information is tailored to specific communities of color, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. And the people that are giving the information or the materials that they provide, they can see themselves in those individuals. They can see that, oh, this is a person that's from my community. There's a connection there, someone that maybe that they trust. So the pastor or a community leader, we have leaders in the community that don't necessarily wear an official title, but they are trusted messengers. And so partnering with those individuals and making sure that they have the information that they need to also communicate that to the community members.
So you say in your handout information here, create a village united around a common goal. Just elaborate on that a bit.
Sure. So it's all, a couple of things. One, it's about eliminating those health disparities. And when we talk about disparities, we're talking about those barriers that I was talking about earlier, but also making sure the information is relevant to us in terms of breast cancer, making sure people have all the appropriate information and that they could also be their own advocates when they go see a healthcare provider. When they're discussing colorectal cancer or just preventative measures in general, knowing that, hey, you need to have your annual an annual checkup. Prostate cancer is very prevalent in African American men. Knowing that when you should get tested, knowing what you should be asking for, and having those really good conversations with the healthcare providers to make sure that you're well prepared and well informed in terms of the decisions that you may need to make about your health, that you are your own advocate and that you have the right to ask questions, that you're a partner, you're a team member in your health. And also educating others, other healthcare providers and other folks that are giving out information, how you should be approaching communities of color, because that's also a learning curve as well. People sometimes feel they can just go into a community and start talking to them. It's like, but have you developed a relationship with those individuals? Do you know the audience? Do you have someone from the community that's trusted that's partnering with you to give that information? So it's definitely a two-way street. And also, what are not only the disparities, but what are the assets that a community brings? I remember when I first became the executive director, I was in a meeting with a company that wanted to share information about breast cancer awareness. And they, basically wanted the organization to do it for free. And so I had to educate them. I said, you're asking folks to go out on a limb and partner with you and utilize their reputational capital to provide information to their community. Their time is of value. And so the way you show that value is you can compensate folks for that. And I remember I just got kind of deer in the headlights, like, why should we be paying community members to provide information to their community? I said, well, you provide resources and compensation to consultants when you hire consultants to bring their expertise or to help you with the business strategy or decision. This is no different. And so again, there's a lot of the paradigm shifts that needed to happen and continue to this day that need to happen in order to bring so that it's a win-win for everyone. I mean, everyone's part of the community. And so a lot of times the communities of color kind of get the short end of the stick and they are disproportionately impacted. And we saw that with the COVID pandemic.
Well, I'm happy that you mentioned the partnership, and I like to call it a teachable moments to the bigger organizations, perhaps, that you are teaching them to be better presenters of healthcare and health issues to those particular communities of color that doesn't necessarily come to your organization, but may go to them, correct?
Yes, exactly. And that we even see people who may have insurance or have resources, but for a variety of reasons, they don't feel comfortable going to a facility and seeking out information or seeking out resources or healthcare. And so that's a problem in terms of people being comfortable enough to have those really rich conversations with healthcare providers, and for healthcare providers to provide an environment which people feel comfortable discussing personal issues, particularly their health needs about about themselves or their family.
And you mentioned the suspicion, and well earned, as we look back historically at the Tuskegee syphilis experimentation on African Americans, and other the pregnancy patch, I think that they tried out in Baltimore. So in terms of having individuals come and be comfortable, that's a huge, huge plus To the individual who is willing to share that personal information and feel that the person that they're sharing it with looks like them, and perhaps maybe even by color or ethnicity, cares a bit more about them than perhaps someone looking different.
I think that's true. And then that's, and also, even if the person doesn't look like them, or they can identify with them, we appreciate that the person acknowledges the mistrust in the medical system, because the medical system and the healthcare system was not developed by us or for us. And so I think if there's an acknowledgement of that, as you mentioned, the Tuskegee experiment, Henrietta Lacks, the woman whose cells have been used for decades to bring medical research to the forefront and helping to discover various vaccines and other things. And just recently, it wasn't until the late 70s that women were sterilized who may have had some mental health challenges right here in California. So it's not that long ago that things have been done to communities of color that were detrimental to our health. And so that trust is not there. And we saw that also with the pandemic, when we were trying to educate people on how important it was to get vaccinated. We had, in some instances, 2 and 3 conversations with individuals in different settings, individuals who would come to the clinic, and we'd have to talk to them for about 30 to 45 minutes to convince them. And they would send maybe one family member in. And if the family member came back and they seemed to be okay, then the whole group of families would come to get vaccinated. And rightfully so. I mean, there's just been a history of mistreatment, and as a result, mistrust in the medical system. And so the first step is acknowledging that that mistrust is there. And how do we build a relationship over time so that when information is provided or when services are provided, that there's already a relationship there, and a relationship based on trust. And I think that was the success of various community-based organizations, as well as ourselves, of trying. We were already in the community providing information and programs and resources. So when the vaccine came along, we were able to communicate to some folks. But like I said, even in some cases, people weren't totally convinced. You know, they were seeing stuff on the internet. They were getting mixed messages in the media. I mean, there was a lot of things happening. And in addition to people were actually losing their lives. So, and that created a lot of stress. So we spent a lot of time just providing information, answering people's questions, giving them that time to even marinate over all the information, instead of just forcing information down people's throats. It's like, hey, let me leave you with this pamphlet. I'll go over with it, take it back, talk to your families, come back to us if you have additional questions, and just really being patient with folks as they try to think about taking this vaccine or getting tested, and how important that was to wear a mask or do other things to protect themselves and their family and their community.
And you kind of summarized, I was going to ask about the disinformation campaign that around the COVID vaccine, you had disinformation. How did you seem like you guys push back on that, because you had a presence within the communities of color, as well as a relationship with some of your members? Talk a bit about that, how that was crucial in terms of at least pushing back on some of the disinformation.
Well, one thing is that we all came together and got into the one virtual room, and that is, we had the researchers, we had public health, we had healthcare systems, we had various faith-based organizations, community-based organizations, individual community members, all coming together and bringing their questions, their assets, their information together. And so everyone's voice was valued and respected. And that was kind of a centralized area where people could get their questions answered right then and there by the same people that were telling them to do certain things or providing information or if people had questions that we couldn't answer, we made a promise to folks that we would come back at the next meeting with an answer or with an expert in that area to talk to the community. So it was a great forum for folks to come together and have these really candid conversations and sometimes uncomfortable conversations that needed to be had about what was happening with the vaccine, why were they hearing certain things, where was this information coming from, what study was that that they referred to on the news. And I just wanted to also give kudos to a really great mentor of mine, and she's at UCSF, Dr. Kim Rhodes, who's the founder of Umoja Health. And she asked myself and one of her colleagues, that's also a very strong community activist and an epidemiologist, to bring together these individuals because people were contacting her from all over California and all over the US. And she said, would you mind facilitating these forums for San Mateo County? And we jumped to the opportunity. We didn't know what we were going to be doing, but the idea of bringing all these individuals and organizations together to have this conversation at a really critical time, where, as I mentioned before, people were literally dying, that really helped because people were doing various different things. But a group over here would have a vaccine clinic, and these folks over here were trying to get vaccine, and these were folks over here were trying to get a speaker to talk to about vaccines. And so we brought all those folks together and said, okay, let's come up with a plan. How can we help each other? It's like, oh, you're having a vaccine clinic? Okay, well, we can help support that. We can, bring some information. We can do this. We can help you with translation or interpretation. Or, everyone was just, everybody was bringing that little, like when you make a great gumbo, everybody was bringing all the different ingredients to really help the needs of the community. And so we have two forums. We have one that's focused on the southern part of San Mateo County, and then we have a group that's focused on the northern part of San Mateo County. And even though, the pandemic's in a different phase, we're still meeting because health disparities was there before the pandemic started. And they're still there. In fact, in some cases, they're worse because of the pandemic. And people saw the value of it, of people coming together and saying, look, we got a problem. Let's resolve it. Or, hey, I've got, we needed gloves at one point, and Kaiser donated some gloves. We needed a mask. Another organization would donate gloves. Or we're like, hey, we have manpower. We want to do this clinic. Can you help us with registration? I mean, it was wonderful just to see how people were really working together because they saw the benefit of it. They saw people were getting the information they needed. They were getting the vaccines or testing or whatever it is that they needed. They were getting those needs met.
Now, I find it interesting in your vision statement, you have BACHAC's vision is to eliminate health disparities through innovative models of health education and services across the generations and diverse communities. Speak about innovative methods or models that you may be implementing there or you plan to implement.
Well, I think, we say innovative, and it's really what the community is telling us they need and listening to people. And so it's kind of, we say innovative, but it's just old-fashioned listening to what is happening around you as opposed to us going off and coming up with what we think is the solution, and then we bestow that on the community. It's really about bringing the community together. And we have a number of different programs that we do. We just had one called Off to a Good Start, which we is focused on physical activity and nutrition. And we bring in people from the community that are fitness experts. And they do step or line dancing or stretch and strengthening. And they reflect the community that they're serving. And so they're exposing the community to different forms of movement. We brought in a holistic practitioner, and he talked about his journey of health. We brought in mental health professionals to talk about how do we even have the conversation around mental health? Because I know I was growing up, we didn't really talk about that. Like we had some folks that obviously were having some mental health challenges, but we didn't really go into any depth, or we just took care of them the best way we could. And we need to know that there are services out there. There's professionals that look like us that are here to help us address some of those mental health challenges. So it's really around what's working. Are we going into the barbershops, the beauty salons, the churches, the places where people are gathering anyway, and having those conversations, or providing information to the barbers, and the hairstylists and our faith-based leaders, and having them feel comfortable having these conversations with their congregations or the people that they know as their clients. That's it, in some cases, people see that as innovative, and we see it as this is how it takes a village to save a village. That's the innovation, is that the innovation is coming from the community themselves, and they're telling us how they want to receive information. That it'd be great to have a vaccine clinic, but can we have some music, some food, making it more festive as a place that you just go to get a vaccine? But again, we were listening to the folks, and that's where the innovation comes in, is that you're actually listening to people as opposed to you being thinking that you're the expert, and you might w well be, but you may not be the expert when it comes to that community. And so being able to be innovative in terms of how you are best serving the needs of the community. Like everyone doesn't respond to a brick and mortar facility. You might need to bring that healthcare to the actual community. You might need to bring it to the laundromats and the community centers and the senior centers, because that's where people are, that's where they feel comfortable. So I think we're always looking for different ways to do things. We know some things work, some things don't. We always kind of experimenting with different things in terms of how we do our programs. We're always looking to modify various things that we do. But I think that's the innovation, is that we're listening to people, and that we're being creative, and we're co-creating with the community that we serve. That's where the innovation lies.
How does your organization measure success for Bay Area constituencies using your organization's services? How do you measure success?
Well, we try to have evaluations, and people tell us, what's worked. Hey, did you like this program? Did you like the speaker? Did you like the content? Did that change how you look at, cardiovascular disease? So we do surveys, we talk to people. We also look at the impact we're making. So last year we did over 300 mammograms. So those were 300 women that normally wouldn't have gotten mammograms. And, some of those women did in fact have breast cancer. So, we see that as a form of measurement. So we take in sort of the tried and true m measurements with surveys and numbers. And we also just talk to people and say, does this make sense? Do you see this success? Do you think other people would benefit from it? So that's how we kind of look at the way we're successful. And there are times when we've had to course correct or do things differently because the feedback that we got indicated that we needed to make some changes.
As a point of personal privilege, might I say another form of success is the fact that you guys are there and been there for so many years, 24/7, year in and year out?
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, to the people that founded this organization, kudos to Miss Gloria Brown, Miss Mary Evans, and many others, longstanding community leaders and residents in our county. They really built a solid foundation for the legacy of this organization to continue. And so we're charged with making sure that we can continue that legacy that they started and the vision that they had almost 30 years ago to really address the community and working together with all the different aspects of the community to really imp or to improve the overall health of the community. So thank you, Dr. Franklin, for that.
You said at the very beginning that you was once a volunteer for the organization and now you are its leader, executive director. And I'm just curious to know, as you look back, what's been, if you can name it, your proudest moment of as a volunteer or as the leader of the organization?
I think as a volunteer, I think one of the proudest moments is to we have another event called Soul Stroll for Health, and that's been going on since 2002. And it was incredible to see just a group of individuals from all aspects of the community out there really enjoying themselves and getting information. So seeing people walking, running, doing some type of movement, having resource tables where people were, getting their blood pressure checked or getting information about heart disease or getting information about breast cancer. That was just when I was a volunteer, I just was like, this is the organization I want to be part of. I mean, I wanted to be part of it from the very beginning. I went to a mammogram program and they, it started on time. They had experts. They had a fashion show with breast cancer survivors. So that was like the first like hook. And then when I went to my first Soul Stroll event, which was that following year, it was just amazing to see a really well put together program that people were enjoying and they were also getting informed while they were having fun. So I think as a volunteer, that really was a highlight for me.
I think I know the answer to the next question, but I'll ask it anyway.
Okay.
And I hear passion in your voice. So you are very passionate about your leadership and your involvement with the organization, yes?
Yes. I mean, it's like I said, when I saw a flyer for the for it was called, I think it was called Breast Cancer Sunday Awareness. And I saw the name of the organization and I was like, well, wow, I want to be there. And just to see people who look like me focus on health, and brought that community and cultural aspect while still providing the information to the community and having experts, breast cancer doctors talking to our folks about how important it is to do X, Y, and Z, or questions that you should ask when you if you ever are diagnosed with cancer. I mean, that was just like the Holy Grail. It's like this is what we're talking about here.
Thank you, Lisa, for your time today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I hope, Dr. Franklin, you'll join us. So thank you.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
My guest today has been Lisa Teeler. She's Executive Director of Bay Area Community Health Advisory Council, San Mateo County, California. I am Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.